Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Navman. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been noticing a number of people heading back on the road, strapping on a caravan, going camping, doing all sorts of different adventures now that we're all putting this whole pandemic behind us. Now, I have a question. If you're going forward driving, how do you actually know where you're going? Have you thought about what tracks you're going to take and how you're going to navigate them, given it's just a dirt road or a dirt trail? Well, Navman actually has you sorted in this area as well. They have four-wheel drive tracks that you can download. These are off-road maps that you can download to your navigation unit. These are things that you're not going to see on your Google Maps or your Apple Maps. They're not going to be there. This is where it's important. If you're planning on touring anywhere in Australia, especially on those beaten tracks, you know, the old coach road in Queensland, going through Cape York, taking the Rig Road in South Australia, the Hay River track in the Northern Territory, the Tasmanian Forest, or even the Great Dividing Range in New South Wales, you need to be downloading the four-wheel drive off-road maps supplied by Navman. These will keep you safe. They've got points of interest, all these different points and directions and locations to make sure that you have the best off-road experience that you possibly can have. I want to make sure you never get lost, whether it's on the bitumen or off the bitumen. Bitumen is in that black stuff. So check out everything that they do at navman.com.au. Not just Nash Cams that I've been pushing for a little while now. But yes, navigation is still something that is very much important and it's not always available on your smartphone. Let's get on with the show.
Rasembrasma Jeff Quattromani, multi-Australian in Sydney.
Tech expert Jeff Quattromani.
Jeff Quattromani, thank you very much from Sydney.
Jeff Quattromani is here.
And now it's time to talk technology with Jeff Quattromani.
Jeff Quattromani.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
What the heck? Let's talk tech.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever it is that you are listening to this show. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Technology Uncorked. Now, I must say, and if you've ever listened to this show once, twice, maybe it's your first time, pop into the review section. Give me one star, give me three stars, give me five if you're feeling generous. I'm always curious to hear from you. I received a couple of emails from you this week and it was nice to actually hear from listeners. And I think you can do that publicly through the review section on Apple Podcasts as well. But ladies and gentlemen, today I have opened a very unusual bottle of wine. And it's unusual because of its design. It's from Vanrock Station. This is an eco bottle. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that eco bottles are bad, but hear me out. This thing is flat. It's not a round bottle of wine. It's completely flat. It's like you've squashed it. It's made of plastic, made of 100% recycled plastic. It's small. It's light. It could easily fit at the bottom of an Esky. It's literally as thick as, you know, some mints that you would buy from Woolies. It's very thin. And it still somehow holds 750 mils of wine. So I got sent one. And I asked, well, as soon as I heard about this, I was like, I need to see this. I need to try it. The bottle does feel very light, especially not being a glass bottle. Yet, it's fascinating. So completely plastic top, no cork, no traditional metal screw cap. It's a very unusual bottle. Now, Vanrock Station, this is a Pinot Noir from South Australia. We're talking about, you know, a good Australian wine. The wine inside this bottle is not good. Now, it is a bit of a soft Pinot. I'm not dying having a sip on it, but it made me wonder whether this is like having a Coca-Cola. I love Coke and I love it in a glass bottle. It tastes so much better in a glass bottle compared to plastic. Second would be a can. Third is the plastic bottle. Now, I wonder if this wine, if it was in a glass bottle, would have tasted better. It kind of bothers me a little bit because I'm not enjoying this wine. It's not good. I love the idea of this easily flat pack, bottle. But if going green means that the wine will taste worse, then I'm not into it. This is a $13 bottle of wine. Obviously, not an expensive bottle, but that doesn't mean that it shouldn't at least taste good. I've had $13 bottles of wine before that I've enjoyed. I've had bottles of wine that cost less than that, and I've enjoyed them, but they've been in glass. And I wonder if that is playing a factor in this in some way, shape, or form. So yes, hooray for the environment, not necessarily for flavor as we sip on this Pinot Noir throughout the show. Now, today on the show, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about Alexa. It's changing. Well, it could potentially be changing. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence doing the drawing for you. We're going to talk about a cat that's not a cat. but it's technology related. We're going to talk about Apple stepping into virtual reality and what we could be looking forward to from that perspective. And then we're going to review the Echo Show 15. This is from Amazon. It is their largest smart display. In fact, it's probably the largest smart display that you can buy on the market at the moment. I've been testing that and can't wait to talk to you about that as well. Let's get on with the show. Gosh, massive apologies to Banrock Station. I mean, that wine is bad. Now, last week, Amazon held an event where they demonstrated some new technology that's coming to market, some things that aren't coming to market, but effectively just showing what they're capable of doing. Now, they demonstrated something that caught a lot of press attention. I have received a number of calls to talk about this on radio, and I thought, let's unpack it a little bit here as well. The headline that most publications went with was that Alexa will soon be able to mimic dead people's voices. Now, that's technically true. However, there is a piece of technology that Amazon unveiled where after playing 1 minute of somebody's voice, it would be able to sound just like them. It's called voice simulation. So effectively, if this technology was available, you would be able to play this podcast to your smart speaker and have me become your voice of your voice assistant, whether that's telling you the weather, whether that's reading your bedtime story, you could have my voice doing it. But obviously, when you start to think about what other voices you could have play, if you have got a deceased person in your family or someone you knew or whatever the case may be, if you had 1 minute of audio of their voice, then yes, it could technically be working. So a lot of people ran with this headline, and I obviously had to then talk about it. I kind of like the idea. To be honest, I kind of like the idea of being able to change the voice to something else. I don't necessarily like the idea of having to play 1 minute of somebody's audio to make that happen. And I think that this would make a lot of sense if Amazon worked with people to create voice simulation so that I could choose or purchase different voices. Take, for example, David Attenborough. He's the man. He's the kind of voice that anyone would recognize. And if I could have my voice assistant sound like anybody, it would be his. I would love to hear the weather in David Attenborough's voice. So if they used this voice simulation and worked with celebrities or people who were well known, then that would be fantastic, because then I might be able to purchase David Attenborough's voice to be my voice assistant. Now, there are obviously risks in doing this, and this is where a lot of the issues come into play. The risks in doing that is that, for example, maybe not with David Attenborough, but what if Vladimir Putin's voice could be simulated on my smart speaker? And then what if I could use pieces of that audio from my smart speaker to, I don't know, call Anthony Albanese or Joe Biden, where effectively you could create a fake conversation. And I don't think Joe Biden would actually recognize that he was talking to a AI. But what if you could use Vladimir Putin's voice to have a conversation with the President of the United States and really cause some trouble? These are the reasons why this technology is actually not coming to market. And I think underneath most of the stories that publications ran with, you may have seen that line that Amazon is not planning on releasing this technology. They're not planning on putting it out into the wild. Your deceased great-great-grandmother will not be the voice of Amazon Alexa, despite the headlines. It's kind of sad how many publications just do not care about what people say in terms of whether a product will or won't be released. That they'll just run with the headline. Literally, I'm reading this one. Alexa will soon be able to mimic dead people's voices. That's the headline. It's completely incorrect. And I think that's kind of hilarious. So the reality is, yes, the technology exists. Amazon will not be releasing it at this stage, probably for those kinds of risks that I just mentioned. But also, if you think about the way that people get canceled these days, people get audio uncovered or they find a secret tape, you could effectively fake all of those through this kind of technology. And that's the risk. And, you know, you wouldn't want, I don't know, somebody to use this voice simulation to call their wife or their kids and say something really bad and make them believe that it was actually them. There's a lot of ways that this sort of technology could be misused, and I think that's why they're doing it. However, I go back to that point I made earlier that I would love to see Amazon work with people to capture voices, create voice simulations that could be sold or downloaded for different use. I'm up for David Attenborough. Some might say Kim Kardashian. Some might say Denzel Washington. There's 100 different people that you could think about having voice simulations for. I'd happily offer mine. Happily. Who am I going to upset? It'd be very cool. I don't think many people would choose my voice, but David Attenborough's, I'd be downloading that. Now, speaking of AI or artificial intelligence, let me tell you about something else. I don't know what you're like at drawing. I used to enjoy drawing quite a bit as a kid. But if you're not a very good drawer is a word. If you're not a very good drawer or artist, then a website called Crayon might be exciting for you. Crayon, C-R-A-I-Y-O-N. Go to that website and have a look at this. You effectively can type in a sentence, and it can be a sentence of whatever you like. So I'm going to type in something like cows drinking wine, mainly because I'm looking out my window, I can see a couple of cows, and I've got a glass of wine in front of me. I hit draw. Now, this tool is not going into Google Images to find pictures of cows drinking wine. Uh-uh. This service is now drawing 9 images of cows drinking wine. And they're trying to do so as artistic and original as possible. It's trying to look at the words that I've used to create an image. That is insane. So Crayon basically means that you can go into this website and you can type in something. I've used a pretty abstract term, but it could be whatever you're thinking of drawing. You type it in, you hit draw, you get 9 of them. You can download those images. They're original. They're not something that you'll find. They're original. They're drawn by AI. And it's absolutely incredible to see it happen. Now, some of the images, and the good thing about getting 9 of them, is that some of them aren't very good. Probably if you actually just ask somebody to draw, not every time it's going to look great. So some of them actually seem to nail the brief. Some of them don't. Some just have a picture of a cow with a glass of wine in front of it. I mean, I get it. It is hard to imagine a cow actually holding a wine-stemmed glass. But some of them actually look quite cool. We might make one of them the album artwork of this podcast so you can actually see what I have generated from Crayon. But I think it's something that people should be trying and actually experimenting with, that if this is where we could potentially be going, what does it do for artwork, for imagery? What does it do for when you start to think about museums? Will we get to a point where someone will walk into a museum and the artist's name will just be an artificial intelligence? Well, I mean, Picasso and them were very, very cool, very impressive pieces of artwork. But when it's AI doing it, who do we give the prize to? Who do we pay? It's fascinating to me. It's absolutely fascinating to me. So AI model drawing images from any prompt. It's absolutely awesome. Give it a crack. Type in something. And I don't know why I went with that, but you'll come up with your own ideas or things that you would like artificial intelligence to draw for you. Now, something a little different, something that's definitely not AI related in any shape or form. I saw this product at CES maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't have pets. I don't gravitate towards pets. I know a lot of people like animals and having animals, and I get it. I don't like them. I don't see, I don't know, the ROI. I mean, they eat, they go to the bathroom wherever they like. I don't see the point of having pets. Anyway, there is a cushion. There is a cushion that you can buy. It's called Petit Cubo. And if you've been a long-term listener for this show, you would have actually heard me talk about this a few years back. Petit Cubo is what looks like a large cushion with a tail. But it's not just a weird-shaped cushion with a tail. It actually feels that you're there. It responds to your touch. The tail will wag. You will hear almost like a purring sound coming from it. And if you put your ear close enough, you'll actually hear a slight heartbeat. Petit Cubo can listen for you, and it can feel you. If you start patting Petit Cubo, that tail might move gently. It might move excitedly when it first hears you after a long day. It's a cat without a head or legs, and with no need to be fed or groomed or loved. It's just a cushion with a robotic tail that listens and reacts to your touch. It's been fascinating to see how much attention this product has gotten. Originally coming from Japan, and I get it, they have some weird stuff over there sometimes, but also living conditions don't necessarily allow for everyone to have a real pet. But sometimes you need a bit of comfort, and this could be the product for you. This is a $230 purchase you can now buy in Australia. And that's why we're talking about it today, is because it's now actually on sale. $230, you'll have it delivered within a couple of weeks. It is coming from Japan. They don't seem to have a local store, but Petit Kubo is available in brown, gray, and I think black. So you can find the pet that you like. It used to come in a couple of different sizes. It looks like it just comes in one size now, which looks like a large size. I don't know. Not for me. Maybe it's for you. Maybe you need a special pet in your life without the hassle of having one. Now, September is an exciting time for us. September is usually iPhone month. It's usually the time that we start to tell people now is the time to buy a new iPhone if you're planning on buying one. I had somebody ask me this week, which iPhone should I buy? I'm thinking about going to get one. It's time, I've had my phone for 4 years, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, can you hold on maybe 3 more months and wait till September? That way you're not buying a phone today, which is then superseded in September. So iPhone month is always exciting, and we would expect, obviously, again this year to see a new iPhone be announced. But that may not be the most exciting announcement coming up from Apple. There is a very, very strong rumor that now we will see a big event happen in January next year. And January is an interesting month because it's CES month. And would Apple actually turn up at CES? Probably not. They would have their own event. But would they do it perhaps a few days after CES or even a week after CES, allowing journalists to go from one place to another? Especially if you've got everybody in Vegas. Heading up to Cupertino would not be incredibly difficult for a lot of people. Having the world's media in one place would be a good time. The reason that they're looking at having this event, however, is to potentially and finally announce the Apple augmented reality / virtual reality headset. Now, this has been a long rumored product. We've been talking about Apple taking a step into VR for a long time. And in the meantime, VR, Oculus, other products like that, they have been percolating. They have been bubbling along. We've been hearing about the metaverse. We've been hearing about all this different stuff that's happening. Yet there's no hardware from an Apple perspective. There's no experiences from an Apple perspective that feed into this category yet. It's for that reason that this will be a heavily rumored product. It's for this reason that we think now would be the time to do it. It's not going to be the first. Then Apple's never the first. But they could be the ones that actually make VR or augmented reality come to life. Now, many will argue, well, of course, it's already come to life. We already have VR. This would be Apple copying, but it's not. If you think about the fact that from a smartphone perspective, people didn't really want a smartphone until Apple made one. People didn't really want a tablet until Apple made one. People didn't really want a smartwatch until Apple made one. And the reality is, when Apple enter the market and they start to do something, suddenly it's real. And it's silly to say this as a tech person, and other tech people would be shaking their heads, but if you think about the general consumer, that's just the way things have gone recently. When Apple first had 5G on a smartphone, suddenly 5G started to get a lot more attention. 5G became a thing that people started to talk about, even though plenty of smartphones had 5G before the iPhone did. The same will happen with this. If we think that VR is something at the moment, you're kidding yourselves compared to how much of a thing VR will be when Apple have a headset that can work in that world. It will be absolutely, it will make 2023 the year of virtual reality. And I'll say that on record now, that if Apple have a headset launch in January, that will be the only thing we'll talk about for the rest of the year. Virtual reality will be the biggest topic of conversation. This podcast may move into the metaverse, and I might sit there doing kumbaya with all my listeners in the metaverse. I don't know. But I'm telling you that if Apple decides to release a VR headset, whether it's January or whether it's sooner or whether it's later, that's when VR will actually take off. And I fundamentally believe that that could be the case. And if the rumors are true, then bring on whatever it is that Apple decides to call it. I don't know what they would actually call it either. I don't think they're going to use the eye in front of anything anymore. I think it will just be called something else. Maybe, and it won't be Wear. I don't know. You let me know what you think Apple would call a VR headset, and we'll bank in the suggestions now. We'll see who's right come January or whenever it is that they do announce it. Now, after this, we're going to talk about the largest smart display I've ever tested. Should you buy one? We'll find out. Now, for me, in my home, I have a mixed bag of voice assistants. I use Google and Amazon. I don't have any HomePods from Apple, so I only have planned the two camps. And it's interesting having both voice assistants in my home because it actually means that when I commit a room to be Amazon-based or one room to be Google-based, I know that my commands aren't going to jump rooms. And that's one of the reasons I do it. Because, for example, when I'm in the kitchen, we have the Nest Hub Max, or the big one. And sometimes I'll be literally looking at it and I'll say something to it. And the Sonos Arc, which has the Google Assistant on board in the lounge room, will respond. Literally 5 meters away compared to 1 meter away, that microphone, for whatever reason, will pick up. And that frustrates me. And you still say, yes, wrong device on the screen, and you try and teach it to actually listen to the closest voice. But it's one of the reasons why I like to use two voice assistants in the home is because in the bedroom we have Alexa, and that means that I can be having conversations there and know that it's not going to start doing things in the kitchen or the lounge room. And again, different rooms of the house have different voice assistants. That's just the way I like to set things up. But the reason I'm talking to you about that is because as much as I enjoy using the Amazon voice assistant, most of the home is Google powered, especially when it comes to displays. And the reason being is the applications that Google have on their smart displays, they're better. And one of the big ones for me is actually YouTube. Being able to just ask to watch a video or play X video and it just starts to do that on a Google smart display is far more handy than what you can do on the Amazon ones. With that said, Google does not offer a smart display like this one. This is the Echo Show 15, and I've tested, I think, all of the Echo Shows of varying sizes from Amazon, but this one I was really excited to get. It looks like a large picture frame, and I say large picture frame, the screen itself is probably the size of an A4 piece of paper, maybe a little bit bigger, and it's got a nice little white border around it and then a black frame. I received the box and was very excited to open it and take it out of the box. I did so. I took it out of the box, power cord, check. Echo Show 15, check. A small piece of metal with a picture hanging hook, check. That's it. Obviously some paraphernalia like some paper and stuff. And for me, that was interesting because I'm testing this product, I didn't really want to put a hole in the wall and mount it on the wall. I kind of wanted to just stand it up on my desk so that I could continue to test it wherever I'm sitting at the time. And I think a lot of people would actually be thinking the same thing, that they're not necessarily planning on always wall mounting the Echo Show 15. Sometimes having a large smart display would be great on a desk or on the kitchen bench, whatever it could be. However, there's no stand. There's no stand in the box. While the device itself, the Echo Show 15, is reasonably thick, that it will stand upright on its own, if you tap the screen a little too hard, because it is a touchscreen, you could knock the whole thing over. And you don't really want to do that with a $400 smart display. So I think Amazon, a $5 stand, like a stick, a little stick would have been nice. Turns out you can buy a stand. It costs extra. It's an extra $50 for the tilt stand that Amazon will sell you. But that makes it a $450 smart display. And it starts to get pretty expensive for something you just didn't want to hang up on the wall. But I guess there. Inclination is that most people will mount it on the wall like a picture frame. And we might do that one day in the future. But with that aside, I took it out of the box, got it set up. Setup was very, very simple. Given it's got a touchscreen interface, most of the device setup can be done on the Echo Show 15 itself. A lot of other smart displays or even smart speakers, obviously, you need to set up with the app and it kind of talks you through it once you're on your smartphone. This was very easy to get going. Once I had it all set up, it's a very interesting device. The screen itself is beautiful, really nice resolution. You can look at it even up close and you don't see really, pixelation. The brightness is fantastic. It does detect the light in the room so that when I do leave the room at nighttime, It's not, you know, all lit up and bright trying to show you all these different things. It does get put itself to sleep. When I walk back in the room, it starts to come back to life as though I'm going to be looking at the device for a number of reasons. And those reasons is what makes this such an interesting product. So when I look at my device at the moment, I can see my screen is kind of split into two. On the left-hand side, I can see the time, date, and current temperature. There's also a picture that rotates. It shows on a rotational schedule, it's showing upcoming appointments. It's showing upcoming like suggested recipes and things like that. And that just continues to cycle. You can customize what does go on that side. But on the right-hand side, I've got three widgets. One is showing my agenda, so upcoming appointments. Another one is showing the weather and upcoming weather schedules. Another one is my smart home favorites, and that means just a very quick interface to turn off and on any smart lights in the home. And then the other widget is my Spotify playlists, and I can just click on a playlist and start playing that. Obviously, I can ask it any other question I like, and that's a huge benefit. It does tie into your video streaming services, some video streaming services, not all of them. And the biggest issue you'll probably have in that space is if you wanted to watch YouTube videos, it needs to be done in a browser. It's not a native application, but streaming Netflix, Prime Video, and Amazon Music all works really simply on the device itself. Spotify is very well integrated into the device as well, which I do like. And if you have your own photos that sync with Amazon, you can also get them to display on the device. Therein lies one of the issues for me, in that I'm heavily invested in Google, that I have Google Drive, Google Photos. And every photo I take automatically gets backed up to Google Photos. And that means that when I go back in the kitchen where my Google smart display is there, I start to see photos which I've taken. I don't have just regular artwork pop up on that display. Whereas on this one, I'd have to start to shift and change my thinking around photos to fit into the Amazon world and have them display on the Echo Show 15. So instead, I have this different layout, which is more about my day. And I do love it. I do love that at a glance, I can see our calendar. I can see what's happening there. I can control lights if I need to. I could even look at the cameras if I wanted to as well. The weather is handy because it means it's one less question I actually need to ask. I can just glance at the display and see that. And obviously with music, I love that I could just walk up to this device, just tap on a playlist that I was maybe listening to the other day, and it just starts to continue playing. There are speakers on this device. They're not too bad, especially just for sort of ambient listening. I wouldn't be hosting a party through this device. The speakers are pretty good. I think in the kitchen, this is where this thing would really thrive. It would be a much nicer device in there. There is a camera on board, so if you are doing Amazon type phone calls, you can use it for that. It's a nice device. I don't really know how to wrap this part up, because the question always comes back to, well, would you buy one? Would I spend $400 on something like this? I don't think I would. Unless I was really starting to move into the Amazon ecosystem, thinking about the products and things like that, then maybe I would think about having my photos there. But when I consider the fact that the Nest Hub Max, which has a louder speaker, and I mean that a louder speaker because it has quite a solid base where the speakers can be housed. It is a smaller display on the Nest Hub Max, but it's kind of big enough. And the way that it integrates into my life at over $100 less, it's a better buying proposition for me. The Echo Show 15, if you're somebody who's heavily into the Amazon ecosystem, then I can see it would be perfect for you. The other thing that I will say, and it's a massive positive from an Amazon perspective, is that I'm someone who uses Amazon Prime. I purchase through Amazon. I love its convenience. And there is nothing better than having a smart display if you're an Amazon customer, because it means that I can just say, something along the lines of, hey, Alexa, I want to buy a robot toy. And it will literally show up on screen five options. And I can be like, number two. Bang, that thing is on its way to my house. Or I could say, I need to buy peanut butter. And bang, it's going to show up at my house. I love that. And I've done that numerous occasions. I've been literally having a shave and run out of shaving cream. And I'm like, hey Alexa, I need to buy some new shaving cream. And it tells me which ones are available. And I'm like, that one, bang, it's available. It's coming tomorrow. That's one of the huge advantages. And if you've got the smart display, you can actually see the product instead of just hearing about it through the voice. And it gives you that confirmation of that you're buying the run that you actually wanted to buy. So there is that advantage. And obviously having something like this in the kitchen means that when you do start to run out of things, yes, you can add it to a shopping list that you could open when you're at the grocery store. But the biggest benefit is actually just talking to it and immediately buying it, especially if you've got a Prime membership, you know, that's free shipping and stuff like that. So there's a huge benefit in doing that. So look, for me, not necessarily the kind of smart display that I'm going to buy at $400. With that said, it plays a really nice spot in my office because this office hasn't really got other smart speakers in it. Oh, it does actually. It's got a Google small Nest one here, but it's not on. But this one will probably be a good fit in my office where I can just sit there. I could see who's at the door on the camera in the display. I could potentially order things if I wanted to. But the fact that it doesn't have YouTube particularly and other all of the streaming apps that the Google one has, I think Google's focused a lot more locally than Amazon has. It does bring some restrictions as well. I hope that helps. It is a $400 smart display, so you really need to be considering whether that's the one for you or you jump on the Google camp and you'll save at least $100 as well. So there is a lot to consider. It is a beautiful looking product. It does look great in this room. It would look really good in the kitchen. It just needs to play a better value proposition in the kitchen. And having my Google Photos appear on the screen in the kitchen at the moment does start more conversations than this one would. And that's a potential problem, especially on the music side as well. There's a lot to consider. Let me know what you think. Let me know what questions you might have, and I will try and answer them either individually or on the show next week if they're something that has a wider appeal. That's it for this week. Stay safe. Look after each other. I'm going to throw the rest of this wine out. I'm so sorry to Banrock Station. Sometimes green isn't great. Have a good week, guys. Bye-bye.